I'm really out of sorts right about now. I don't even have my hat on, and you guys know I'm a hat person, those that know me. God, Dane, I don't know how you do this. All right. Help me with the serenity prayer. That helps get me out of the way. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. First, I want to thank the committee for asking me to come up this way. That's a good thing. Also, I want you to look, we're a small crowd, and I love this. This is like friends. This is almost not doing a lead. This is, you know, because we talk about a lot of stuff. I don't even know where I'm going with this today, guys, so this is all going to be an adventure. This is all going to be an adventure this morning. You know, we're not going to talk about the weather. Oh, no, I got to go 500 miles in a blizzard. That's okay. Because if you had asked me, Terry, I got a half ounce of powder. If you show up in Milwaukee, it's yours. Do you know how I would hitchhike? I would find a way to get here. You know what I mean? That's just what I do. That's the kind of addict I am. I am definitely the cocaine addict. I'm definitely, I qualify for all of the A's. All of them. You know, I was the guy with the needle in his arm and the pipe in his mouth. That type. You know, I don't do a little bit, I do a lot. I didn't look at it that way. It started out as partying. I like the way you did yours, and I'm going to let you know. First, let's see, my sobriety date is January 15th of 91. That's crazy. You must be some of the people I ripped off. That's crazy for me, because I found out I still have addict thinking a lot. Addict thinking, you know. And one of the analogies I use is that a friend of mine got a car, and I'm looking at this trunk of this car, and this was a couple of years ago, and I'm thinking, and I told him, I said, man, you'd get like 5 keys and 3 bodies in this trunk. And the normal person is not thinking in bodies and keys. Whatever normal is, they're not there. And I have to remember that. I have to remember things like that all the time. As far as background concerned, I was raised in Akron, Ohio. Raised there. As you can see, I am old, and what? I didn't think I would. I didn't think there was one time in life I didn't think I would make 25. And all of a sudden, I'm the old guy, and I'm like, what the hell is that about? Oh, and that's another thing. I'm going to let you know, thank you for being, who was that? Where's Mike at? I don't see him. But the spiritual speaker, but I do swear, I'm going to throw this disclaimer out here right away, because there are times when saying I am disturbed today just doesn't get it for me. I like to say I'm fucked up. I just want to let you know that. You know, so those you guys with the religious content, call your sponsor and pray. All right, raised in Akron, at an early age, I'm the oldest of 5. You guys don't know a lot about Akron, and really I'm still finding out things about Akron. Raised on the west side, somewhere along the line in my junior, I was not one of the guys who was in high school or even junior high was the hip-slicking cool guy. I was a guy on the outskirts that was, I was a reader. I was on the outskirts, you know, along the wall somewhere if it was an event. I'm along the wall looking at and envying the hip-slicking cool guys. You know, I wasn't the one that could walk up to the women and start talking and all of that. I've never been one of those. Well, women, I just lied. Because as I got older, I became one of those. Early age, started playing music, saxophone, alto saxophone. I I got to settle down. Started playing saxophone in high school band. From that, we had a garage band. I was just reminded of that not too long ago. Somebody heard the garage band, and they actually were in a real band. And Akron was known at one time, especially a certain area called Howard Street, was known for the blues and the R&B that they play on there. And I was one of, this guy asked me to be a part of their band, and they were the real thing. We were just a garage band. And my first real gig was on Howard Street, Benny Rivers. I loved that. They didn't know that I got paid for playing music. They didn't know that I would pay them, because it was just that kind of feeling. I'm not an early bloomer as far as I have to that time, although my dad was a drinker. I used to say I didn't want to be like him because he would get drunk. He was a weekender. But he kept the same job like 35, 40 years, and he had other jobs and owned businesses and stuff like that. And I said, ooh, I didn't want to be like him, because when he got drunk, he would call his oldest son down, me, because some kind of way him and mom had this disagreement that once he got drunk, she would go up into the bedroom and shut the door, and he would stay downstairs. And he would call his oldest son down, and I would have to listen to him rant and rave and go through his different stages of being drunk. You know, I watched all the stages, I mean the extreme stages, all the way up to the point where he would be crying, and, you know, and I used to say, I didn't want to be like him. I don't want to be like that. And what happened is I became worse. He was known on the block too. They used to call him Crazy Don. But Don had a family, and he took care of his family. We had, you know, it was a whole neighborhood thing. And at one time, even in sobriety, I would say he was dysfunctional part of our family. But he wasn't. I became that person. Anyhow, going back to the story, that band that I joined, they were originally out of St. Petersburg, Florida. I was supposed to walk across the stage in June. I left with that band in March. I ended up in St. Petersburg, and I started about 4 or 5 years of traveling as far as music's concerned. What I didn't know is that God is very, very good, because I'd never gotten in major trouble. But I did all the things that I should be. I should have 5, 6 numbers. But I figured God said, well, this little black fool here, he's just, you know, he won't handle it. So I didn't ever. It's not because I was that smart, that slick, that quick. I just never got in major trouble there. It started 4 or 5 years of traveling as far as music's concerned, being an entertainer. I played on big shows with 20,000 people. I played in little shows with the juke joint. I found out what a juke joint is. Some of you don't know, there's some of the places, like I think my first one was in Wrightville, Georgia, and it was a little house out in the woods, and I'm thinking, who's going to show up at this? And before I knew it, the place was packed. There were people hanging out in the windows. They got mason jars of white lightning, and I'm like, whoa, this is cool. This is, like, cool. All right, long story short, I'm going to get through this real quick. Because I got once I left Akron, Ohio, I got a brand new education as far as drugs and alcohol and stuff like that's concerned. Walking in Atlanta, one of the places I ended up was in Atlanta for about a couple of years. And the band was stationed out of there, this particular band. And the guys, we need to go down and get some outfits. You know, you hate to be on stage, and there's people in the audience got the same thing you got on. So we were, you know, that type of thing. Walking through this place called Peachtree Park. We're walking, there's about 5 of us, and we're walking, and a guy walked by us, and he said, acid, mescaline, pot. I said, what? And then another guy walked by us, and he said almost the same thing, and I'm saying, yeah. Now, this is, if there's any sign of what kind of addict I was going to be, this is what it is. I said, yeah, and he said, well, meet me over here, and I said, okay. And I met him over there, and I got things of mescaline. Now, I didn't even know what mescaline was going to do, but I'm going to try it. I'm that type. And, all right, we went on. We ended up going, I remember the store. We went to the Gap store. And we got what we had to do, and then we went back to this house. We had a house there. Our manager had renovated this house, and there were like 8-9 bedrooms in it. So I'm in the room, and I got this stuff, and I said, well, what is it going to do? And I said, well, find out. And I dropped one, and about 15 minutes, I messed around for, and nothing's going on. I'm like, damn, I should have known. I got some bunk stuff. So I dropped the next one. All right, you understand. You understand. I love you guys. I ended up dropping all three of those. And when this stuff hit, oh my God, lights were blinking. And that night, we were going over on the other side of Atlanta to jam with another band. Jam meaning there's a band playing somewhere, you're going to go and sit in with them and just have a good time. It wasn't a gig for us, we're just going to go have a good time with these guys. And I was one of the drivers, as far as we had two vehicles. All of a sudden, the freeways in Atlanta got like a snake. All of a sudden, I'm trying to just stay in between the two lines. We get there. This particular nightclub is under a restaurant, and there were like little Christmas lights all around, so they're blinking, and I'm blazing, and it was crazy. That's the kind of addict I am. Terry, check this out. And he put it in my hand. I drop it and say, what's it going to do? That's the kind of addict I am. I don't want to forget that. All right. I'm going to get through this real quick, because what happened is we ended up on the West Coast. In fact, our very first stop in the West Coast, we got a place in North Hollywood, California, and the band decided that they weren't going back to Atlanta. We're going to work off the West Coast. By this time, I'm tired of living out of suitcase. If you're a band member, we stay in a lot of hotels, a lot of motels, no home-cooked meals. I'm tired. And I said, well, you guys, they got another gig up in Canada. And I said, you know what? When you guys come back through, I'll pick me up. And what ended up, I stayed in North Hollywood. I heard somewhere that if you can make it in New York, if you can make it in California, you can make it anywhere in the world. And I was decided, I'm going to stay out here. I became the pothead. You know the guy, there's always one guy that could walk in the room and go, ah, you got some indica, bud. Or that skunk, that's that skunk stuff. Yeah, I became that guy. And I was proud of that. I was proud that in this little North Hollywood Van Nuys area, if there was a drug, if there were drugs within 5 miles, I knew where they were, so people would come to me. It's crazy. It was really crazy. I had a good time, though, at that time. Once again, God is just so good. I had to get a regular job. And what I didn't know, I became a machinist, and that's what my dad was. For some reason, that didn't click until I got older. Loved the machine shop. Loved my speed. Oh, my God. Loved my speed. I understand when the speaker last night said, the Coke just pissed me off. I understood that. Because when you hit that speed, I'm a little guy anyhow. This is as big as I've ever been. Look at this. This is it. So when I hit that speed, man, my day would go by fast. Zoom. The downers were all right, but I would get too wasted. And I guess I have some control issues. You notice I said some control issues. And I like to see what's going on around me. Before we would go out, or some of the guys would go out, we would get together, and I was a partier, definitely. I'm riding motorcycles, I'm partying, I'm a weekend warrior, take my little speed, you know, we're going out somewhere, I take my little speed so that I got energy. Of course, I always had my little pot with me, so I was mellow. I drank my little Jack Daniel or whatever, because then I got my energy. It's like a chemist. You understand what I'm saying? This is before I get to where the hell I'm going. There are concerts that I passed out in. So, oh, my God. It's crazy. Hollywood Bowl. And I'm hanging out, you know. It just got crazy. I didn't think of it as crazy. I just thought, well, you got a little bit too much here. You got a little bit wasted. A little bit that I remember. All right, getting through that. My first wife was my looker. She was my 36, 24, 36. She was crazy. It was like living with Lucille Ball, though, because it was like craziness going on all the time. I knew it wasn't going to last long because we partied too hard together the same way. My second wife was the cooker. She would make them deep dish peach cobblers. She's trying to put weight on me. You're not the only one. Trying to put weight on me, and I and that was cool. You know, that was cool. She had two kids. They were like 8 and 9 when we met. Her father was a Lutheran minister, Pastor Sanders. I'm talking about 35-year, 40-year Lutheran minister. And he would show up at the house every now and then. And he would look around because I got me, Ogre, Honker, Little Red, and we're working on motorcycles, drinking Jack Daniel, you know, and the pastor would look at us and, well, Terry, how's it going? Pastor, it's going good. And he'd look around and he'd say, interesting. Interesting. I used to like, hate that word, interesting. I did a 30-day stint in L.A. County Jail, IRC, one time. And I never got my numbers, but I got so many tickets. If they let me go, I'm not showing up in nobody's court. Come on. So when I go to jail, I finally get busted. I would do like, they take me to court in Van Nuys. It's a little misdemeanor. 3 days served and you're out. All right, they take you back to the county jail. The next day, I get on the bus and you go to another court. Let's say Beverly Hills. Beverly Hills court was like the movies, guys. It was like, I mean, it was like pretty. You know what I mean? Anyhow, you go to the court there, and it was like a 3 day serve. And I would bounce for like about a week at these different places, Compton, Malibu, because I partied all over the place. So I ended up doing a 30-day stint, and the pastor would show up. You know, pastors and lawyers get into jail like it's nothing. He'd come in and say, well, Terry, how's it going? Pastor, I'm going to be out in a few minutes. You know, just, you know, it is what it is. And he said, And you look at these guys, and I'm in my dress blues or whatever they call them, you know, jumpsuits. Interesting. I'm going to bring that back up later on. Don't let me forget that one. Going on with the story, let's see. I told you I'm riding motorcycles. I'm getting high not every day, mostly the weekends. But yet, like this, since this is a progressive disease, it got worse. It got worse. One of the things that happened is I knew this. Now, see, I'm at the age where it wasn't, you know, the media labeled it crack. Really what it was, I was priding myself on not being a crackhead because I would get powder and rock it myself. That means I'm not a crackhead. Oh, yeah. And this is, and, you know, this is also back in the day of the freebase. No, I'm not a crackhead. And I knew that anybody that messed with this drug, because I already told you, I've given you a background on what kind of drugs I'm using. I knew that anybody that was messing with that rock cocaine stuff was going down. It always happened, down, down, down. Well, me and the lady had been together for about 10 years now, and might even 11. And we're going through a period of time, I didn't recognize it, but I actually got a chance to put her daughter in college for a while, and the guy was away in the service, so it was just me, the woman, and the dog, and me and the dog are catching hell because she's going through some kind of change of life. All right, I said, you know what? I don't have to do this, and I left. And of course, the same day I met Miss Sweet Young Thing, half my age, and she'd been always giving me the nod on, you know, and I was like, damn. And so she said, I got a new apartment, why don't you come on down? And I said, well, sure, why? Yeah, you know, my ego struck up because, you know, my chest popped out. I'll come visit for a while. And that visit lasted about 3 months. Miss Sweet Young Thing was smoking. She was smoking hard. My ego says, well, I can do this. And I just told you, I know anybody that's smoking is going down. In fact, that first couple of days, I tried to make it a social event because I went and got some powder, you know. I knew all the I knew all the dealers in this area. There's the Mexican area, the Hispanic area over here, and you know, I knew where they was at. And I went and got some powder. I'm going to impress her. I got me a nice amount. She knows what to do with it. I thought, all right. I was going back to her place, and some guy said, "What's up, man?" I said, "I'm going." And they looked at me like, you ever see the dog look at the TV when he cocks his head? They looked at me like that because they were like, "What?" And I remember that night because 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, there's some guy stuck on the remote TV. He's stuck there. There's somebody peeking outside the window. And I'm like, whoa, this is a trip. That was also the first time the guy I was dealing with, while he's talking with me, he's picking up stuff and tasting it. And I'm thinking, what the hell? Well, I became that guy. I became that guy that I used to keep a little flashlight, one of those little flashlights in my pocket, and I would sweep the floor. Oh, yeah, sweep the floor. Turn the lights out, even. Sweep the floor, boy, looking for anything, any kind of lint, any kind of popcorn, any kind of kitty litter. You know the routine. I became that guy. Messed me up when I found a 50-cent piece. Found a nice nugget. Oh, my God. The rest of my using days, I walked with my hands in my pocket and my head to the floor. I didn't see people's faces. I didn't see cars. I got stuck on a block. There was a block in North Hollywood down there by Magnolia and Vineland. There was a motel there. There was a Mexican store right next to the motel, and he sold food out of there. So I didn't leave that block for about a month. For about a month, unless I was going to cop dope. Crazy, insane. As I think of it now, it was so insane. At the time, it was the thing to do. That's where my disease took. I know it now, know it's a disease. I now know how progressive it is. And it just got crazy, guys. It got crazy. Oh, my God. And this is a disease that it doesn't make any difference what color you are, what how much money you got, who your family is. It just takes grip and it runs. I got high with people that were famous and people that, you know, and it was insane. I met a couple of guys. I used to like to go down to Hollywood Boulevard. Now, this is BC. BC is before crack. I used to go down Hollywood Boulevard when the kids were with us, and we would, you know, when you don't have any money and no place, nothing to do, I go park on a street behind Hollywood Boulevard. We just trip up and down the boulevard. Well, one time I went down there with a friend, and he had another friend who was in a sitcom, a very popular sitcom, and we ran up onto him on the streets behind Hollywood Boulevard, drinking, partying, and we drank and partied with him. And the action is not on Hollywood Boulevard, it's on the back streets. There's lots of stuff going on all the time. And I'm like, whoa, it's crazy. Well, after I started smoking, of course, those trips, I didn't have no more vehicle, of course, you know that, right? Mm-hmm. All right, all the vehicles, motorcycles gone. Vehicles gone. I remember I left mine on the side of the street, transmission or something happened to it, and that's another thing that we do. I would have $150 in my pocket and put $2 in the gas tank. That never made sense to me, but that's what I did. That's what I did. Anyway, getting through this again. I'm with Miss Sweet Young Thing. That lasted, like I said, that visit lasted about 3 months. When I said she was half my age, the stuff she's going through, I've already gone through, and it was just too much drama for me, and I, you know, it was got crazy. I'm talking about all night binges, 3-4 days in a row. I'm talking almost getting busted lots of times. The wife at the time, she tracked me down. She found out where I was at. She tracked me down, and she showed up one day and said, "I'm pregnant." Now, we've been together 11 years, 10, 11 years. Yeah, all right. But what's going on with Miss Sweet Young Thing is not happening. So I said, you know, my way out is get back with the lady, right? All right, get back with the lady. God is so good on this, and he does crazy stuff. Because what happens is that not only is she pregnant, when that baby popped out, it looked just like me. She used to look at me and say, "I was only a vessel." And I used to wonder, what the hell is she talking about? But as the baby grew up, I found out it was my daughter. And she, if you see us walking down the street, you say, "Oh, those two are together," you know, because we look the same. Only she's cuter. uh, Alright, but now I've been introduced to smoking and I like it. My first high was the one that everybody searches for. That was the one that also that I chased for the rest of my rock smoking days. So we're back together. The apartment at the time that she stayed in, of course, she couldn't be able to make the rent. So that three months I was gone, of course, she's being kicked out. But I had something that I used. There were certain things that I used when I was getting high. As far as a addict or alcoholic, there were things that worked for me. One of them is, all right, apartment's going down. You don't have any money to get another place yet. So I would store all the furniture. We get a motel, and I stack cash. You know what I mean? Make money and get another place. I've done it several times. Never been a responsible guy. And that's what I did. So I said, all right, well, here we're going to. Now we got a brand new baby. The baby was small enough. She fit into the chest of drawers that are in these, like in the motel. Well, she fit in the bottom chest of drawer as far as it's that wide. You could fit. She sleep right there. And it was like, cool, all right. Well, I remember the first night in this motel. It's 2-3 in the morning. Yeah, I was smoking, but I'm keeping that away from her. I mean, you know what I mean? She doesn't know. But I hear a noise outside, and I look out the window. I'm peeking out the motel window, and there's like 7 or 8 people out there walking around that parking lot at the motel. And I'm wondering, what the hell is going on? I didn't hear no commotion, like no fight or nothing, and I'm wondering what the hell is going on. And what was going on is, I call this a night of living dead, because they're waiting on the dope man to show up in the parking lot. And of course, later on in that week, I was one of those people. I became one of those waiting on the dope man to show. It just got crazy. I got this baby. Me and the wife, we're in this motel room. Smoking. You know, I'm using money that I don't have. I'm talking about rent money, I'm talking about baby diaper money, I'm talking about milk money. And when I say rent money, I'm not talking about rent for the next month or the next week, I'm talking about rent for the next day. It got real sad, real quick, and I didn't feel it. And I'm in the midst of all of this stuff, and not only don't I see it, I don't feel it. So what happened is the wife finally said, I can't do this no more. And she went to live with one of the kids. And I don't know about you, the women, I don't know if you know about the male ego, but my ego said, that means I can get high the right way now. I can do this the right way. And that started a downward spiral. I became homeless. I became one of those guys that lasted out there 2-3 days, you know, till you finally find a place to pass out. It got bad and ugly real quick. All right, I got to get to a happier note because I get depressed now. And what happens is, I finally got a lightweight bus. A lightweight bus, cops kicked in a door one time. I don't know if you ever been on one of them bus, but they don't care who you are. They just slam you around. And I remember getting slammed upside the wall so hard that it was crazy. And I already told you that the L.A., a judicial system has never been able to make me do anything, but one of the things they said was that if I would go on and do this drug deferment class, they would wipe this off the record. Not that I was worried about my record, but at the same time I said, well, why not? One of the things I had to do these CA meetings. I got busted on, if they caught me in earlier in the day, it was major, major felony stuff. But they caught me, you know, I'm a smoker. Monkey cannot sell bananas, peanuts. So when they caught me later on, I just had crumbs. And I just had crumbs. And I had to do, it was a CA bus, I mean, it was cocaine bus, so I had out there. That's also where Cocaine Anonymous started. I wanted to let you know that. And one of the things they had in place there was that, well, it was a cocaine bus. You do these CA meetings, you go get this paper signed. And I had to go once a week to this class where this doctor would tell me what liquor was doing to my liver and how all this stuff, you know, I had to do this whole thing. And I got to tell you, my first couple of CA meetings, I was high. Now, I wasn't high on cocaine, but I know I had a, you know, a joint somewhere, because that's what I do. God, I didn't want to be with you guys. You guys got on my nerves. I walked in, I remember first coming on down, it was a place called Studio 12. I found that somebody said something about this. There's this place that where they do meetings at. And it was a house down on Magnolia there, and I was like, yeah, okay. And I remember going to this meeting, and of course I showed up late. I'm walking down the driveway, and I hear a prayer, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm with them religious people. They're going to be laying hands on you and speaking in tongues and shit. I don't want to go here. But I went anyway. Out there, the meetings are a little different. As we do the readings, and then you take a 10-minute coffee break, and then you come back. If it's a speaker meeting, come back to listen to the speaker. If it's a step study, you know, you work on stuff. And during that 10-minute coffee break, of course, there's that newcomer guy who's maybe got 3-4 months. He walks up to me, hi, my name is such and such, and I'm an addict. And I'm saying, good. You know, because I didn't think this was nothing to brag about. This is nothing to talk about, you know, what, but. And, but I kept going until I got that paper signed. All I had to do was one paper sign. I'm amazed at this. Anyway, what messed me up, by this time, I am like the big book talks about. I am I'm unemployable. I have no place to stay as far as, well, I got back with the wife, of course, and I was staying where she was staying, and she was staying with the kids. I justified it was, hell, the last 10, 11 years, 12 years, the kids have been staying with me. I could stay for them a couple of nights. In reality, I was homeless. And I kept doing these meetings, and then the paper was signed that I didn't have to do the meetings. And I found myself the very next day at a meeting. And I now know that what was going on in rooms like this is a lot better than what was going on with me in my life. I started doing meetings. And you know how you guys do it. In fact, if you look around right now, in this room right now, these are the hardcore people. These are the people, if you're anybody in here new, these are the people you want to hang with. Right here, in here now. Look, you got snow out there, 3-4 feet going to be, and they're in a damn meeting. What better place to be? Anyhow, I started doing these meetings, and I kept coming back, kept coming back. I showed up at the meeting a few minutes early. It was a mistake. Ira, little guy, short guy. He sold used cars, so he would always have a pinstripe suit on, and while he's chairing this meeting, he'd take his little jacket and put it on the back of his chair. And I used to love Ira, because he would end the meeting, you know, he hit his pants, he had a little suspenders, like James Cagney type shit, and he hit his pants and he said, the only good gram is a program. And I thought that was cool. I liked Ira. Well, I showed up early this one time, and Ira said, Terry, I've been showing up, they knew my name. Terry, our coffee man didn't show up. You're our coffee man. You know how you guys, you don't need, we just appoint you. I'm sorry. You know, there is no vote. That's what we do. I said, okay. And I was like, well, what does a coffee person do? That was a duh. But, you know, he said, well, and he, all right. He handed me a 20. Jacked me up because I'm not out of this stuff already. I'm still glazed over. I didn't even know I was glazed over. He handed me a 20 and said, when you come back next week, bring some coffee. I think it was creamer. It might have been sugar, but creamer. And out there, a pound cake. Because what happens is, when you have an anniversary, they take a candle and put it into the pound cake and sing you happy birthday to you, keep coming back, that type of thing. In other words, if you got a year, they put one candle in there. And if you got 2 years, they'll take that candle out, give you that candle, and put two candles in there. And you know, then that type of thing. So I had to bring back coffee, creamer, and a pound cake. Well, the 20 I didn't know was a trigger for me, because I seen it and I got it, and I like started shaking, and I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And down on the corner, down that street, Magnolia and Lower Canyon, there was like Alpha Beta, which is a grocery store out there. So I said, okay. And I left out of there, and I broke into a run, and I ran down Alpha Beta and got that stuff he talked about. I didn't trust myself. this is also how I knew I wanted to stay sober. Because, you know, in the first beginning, I didn't even know I wanted to stay sober. And then I broke back, and I got back to Studio 12 before they had even cleaned up, put the chairs up and the ashtrays and all that stuff. And I gave him his stuff, I gave him the receipt, and I gave him change. All right, this is how I knew I wanted to stay sober. I've always been the middleman. I told you guys I knew where all the dope was and all that stuff. Well, excuse me, you said, Terry, I need this. You give me the money. I go to the same guy all the time, so he's going to break me off a little bit for giving him business. So I do that, and then he gives me what you wanted, and then I break off of that, and then I go back to you, and I give you your stuff, and then I sit there and look at you because you're going to break me off some too. The middleman always gets his. The middleman always gets his. More. I gave this man back a receipt and change. I'd never give anybody any change. That was like a rule against rules. I don't do that. So I said, damn, you must really want to stay sober. So what happened is I'm staying sober now. My spiritual experience was, it's been 60 days, and I actually got a dollar or two in my pocket, and I didn't think about going and getting a rock. That was my spiritual experience. I was like, whoa. We're talking about it every day. In these meetings, and I didn't think about going to get a rock, and I got money in my pocket. I was like, oh my goodness. I'm at a meeting, and a guy come up to Terry. Yeah, his name was Pete. Pete has his own business, and he had uses guys out the rooms, all women, and for his business. And in his business, he needed help, and he said, I need you to work. You want to work for me? And I said, sure. Because I'm not working nowhere now, guys. So I started working with Pete and his little business, and it was really cool. This is God does. He set up a bunch of things. God has always done for me what I couldn't do for myself, and I didn't know it. What happened was we have to get together 5 in the morning. We have to be at the job site by 6. We work till about 10 or 11 o'clock. We take about a 3-hour break. During that 3-hour break, if there's a new meeting, we go to the meeting or whatever, and then we get back together about 2 o'clock and we go to the next job site. I'm doing meetings during the noon and at night. We're riding down the freeways of LA, and we're flashing signs at each other, AA and CA, and oh, it was crazy. It was crazy. But it was good. It was all good. One of the guys said, have you ever checked that Saturday night Big Book meeting out? I said, no. He said, the women are hot. Oh, this is how I got to. God is good. Remember this. Don't get it twisted. So I show up at a Saturday night meeting just because he said the women were hot, a bunch of guys. And not only were the women look good, was it a doctor's opinion? It wasn't a doctor's opinion. It was the beginning of the Big Book because they're talking about Akron, Ohio. Now remember, I'm in North Hollywood, California. And they're talking about Akron, Ohio. And I said, my ears perked up and said, wait a minute, I'm from there. And then they said about the Mayflower. Wait a minute, I was part of Booked Ohio's band, and we stayed there while we did the Soapbox Derby stuff. I know about this stuff. You mean it started there? They didn't tell me this stuff. And that was got me interested in the Big Book. Got me interested in a Big Book. A book written by 2 middle-class white guys in 1939. Now, how is that going to make, that's going to do something for me? What I didn't know is that all the feelings that Bill and Bob were going through, I went through. Jacked me up. The stuff, I mean, yeah, sometimes it needed translating, but I understood what was going on. I started learning from the Big Book. It got me interested. So I'm working now. I got another apartment now. I got another car. I got a little motorcycle. It's just little, but that's okay. I'm on 2 wheels. I'm happy. Things are going good. All of a sudden, I'm a GSR at one of these meetings. I think it was a Wednesday Love and Tolerance meeting out there in Colbex. GSR, that's intimidating. I had to do? And they told me, you go to this meeting at this address and just bring back information or whatever the case may be. I said, all right. So I go to my first meeting, and all you guys are in there with briefcases and all of that. I don't know, but I'm thinking, these are lawyers and businessmen. What the hell am I doing in there? I didn't know that all you guys were drug addicts like me. Up, oh, some of you are worse. So I did that. So my first stint in service was a coffee person. Then the next one was GSR. And this started a whole, my journey was started, guys. I just didn't even know my journey was started because I am now a for real, verifiable service junkie. This is what I do. And I found out, for me, the more I stay out of my life gets better. Now, that might not make any sense to anybody if you're new, but the more I stay out of my life gets better. As long as I've got a commitment, I suit up and show up. That's one of the first things I learned. Suit up and show up no matter what your brain is thinking. Because my brain tells me some crazy stuff. Right now, today, I got 24 years, is that what I got? Something like that. And my brain still tells me crazy stuff on a daily basis. I use the serenity prayer so much, guys, I had to stop every now and then. And actually, you know, you can say it automatic, but I have to think about what the words mean. And the wisdom to know the difference, you know, stuff like that. I had to think about that. So I'm doing service, guys. I'm doing these meetings out there. My sponsor. I did not chase down a sponsor. Because at the time, early in sobriety, I got to tell my business to a grown man. He going to tell me how to handle him, tell me what to do. I don't know. Damn that. And on one of those coffee breaks, me and a couple guys are sitting outside, sitting down smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee, getting ready to go back in the meeting. Black guy, about 6'4", 6'5", guns. Walked up and said, "Your name's Terry?" And I said, "Uh-huh." And he said, "I'm your sponsor, Alonzo." I said, "Okay." Hey, he was bigger than I. It looked like he whooped my little behind. And what I didn't know, his sponsor, Felix, had said, "What you need is a baby. Go out there. That guy's name's Terry. Go get him." That's what had happened. And Felix and Alonzo started taking me through the steps. And my journey, like I said, my journey goes. It just goes from there, guys. 95, I'm 4 years sober. I'm still doing stuff I think I'm supposed to do. I'm praying a little bit. All right, the guys I'm running with, not only do I have a job, I got like two jobs, maybe even three. If you count, there was another guy that had an incense business, and he would send me home with tubs, and while we were watching TV, we'd pack his little incense stuff. I'm working. I think two jobs are for two people, but I'm making money. And I'm starting to notice that not only things have gotten better, there's a lot of people know my name, and as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, my life is good. 5 years sober, 95, no, 4 years sober, 95. I actually got some money, and on that little baby, she's going to be six. On her sixth birthday, her and I are going to fly to Ohio so she can meet my side of the family. What I didn't know was that we got here on February 6th. That was a Wednesday. My dad was in Akron City Hospital, but he thought he was getting, no, it was on a Tuesday, because he thought he was getting out of the hospital on Wednesday. And so, you know, went in, I said, all right, what do you know? And I got to tell you, when I say God is good, and I've said that a lot during this whole, especially this thing here going on. That was the first time my dad had seen all five of his kids in the same room in 17, 18, 19 years. And to make this part of the story short, he passed away in my arms the next day on that Wednesday. It was like, whoa, what is this all about? So what I did is what I was told to do. Because, you know, by this time, I used my sponsor. Maybe I didn't chase him, but I used him. I used him up. And the guys around me were my support group. I didn't know that. We're doing the same thing. We're staying sober. We're working. We talk trash. We talk all kinds of trash all the time. I'm still a sick puppy up here. I'm burning up the lines of California, and they're telling me what to do. They're telling me, no, well, you get a chance to stay there, and you help put it all together, and that's what I did. Me and my sister and my mom, we all put all the stuff together, his home-going service. It went down nicely. And then what happened is me and the little one flew back to California after the whole service was done. And the wife at the time said, well, why don't we move to Ohio? Now, I've heard of people moving from Ohio to California. You would be surprised at the number of Ohioans that are in California. You would really be surprised. I was like, what? Who's in Ohio? All these people are here. But I've heard of people moving from Ohio to California and being all right. I didn't hear of people moving from California to Ohio being all right. And I said, well, you know, I told her, yeah, but I knew we couldn't do it because even though I got a little money coming in and all that, I still live check to check. And that would take money. And what happened was this God doing his thing, man. Within a week, I had $5,000 cash laying on the bed. She had checked on an insurance policy that her parents had kept. Somebody made an offer on this little Dodge Dart that I just picked up with somebody had taken down the Mex Tijuana, and they got a diamond tuck, the seats and all of that, and it was really in good shape. Somebody made an offer on my motorcycle, and like I said, all of a sudden I got this money. I looked up and I said, I guess you want me to move to Ohio, huh? And you know, I said, okay. So we set it up and we moved back, and it really flowed really nice. When it's God's will, it flows so nice. When it's Terry's will, it's real bumpy, real bumpy. I found that out through that episode. So God's will, it flowed. No problems. Got to stay in Vegas for a day, lose a little bit of money, not a lot. Got to see the Grand Canyon, got pictures and all of that stuff. The stepson, Teddy, he took off work, and he helped me drive out here, and we flew him back, and all of a sudden I'm back in Akron. All right, this is full circle. 2 months from the day I arrived, well, on the day I arrived back, which was a Good Friday, my sister's son, my nephew, got his leg shot off up in Detroit, and that was like, what? And as soon as he got out of the hospital, we went up there and we pulled him back to Akron. Okay. My mom, she was in this house on the west side of Akron, and I've always felt like she's mourning. She just lost a 47-year relationship. And I really, you know what I mean? And even though there's other kids, I knew she was in that house by herself. That was really my reason for moving back. All right, so we got Charles, my nephew back. Things are settling down here. I'm starting to do CA meetings around there. And 2 months to the day after I got back, that woman, Annelle, she had congestive heart failure. She had, on a Sunday night with nothing going on, she passed away. Yeah. Now, I got to tell you, what's happening is there are so many blessings involved here, and it doesn't seem like it, because I'm thinking, oh, man, what is going on? All right, let me tell you some of these blessings. I just told you, remember, that my dad passed away, and he hadn't seen all five of his kids in the same room in 17, 18 years. When Annelle passed, I got a chance to be there for her family and the kids. We flew kids out, flew the pastor out. And wait a minute, I got to tell you, no, we didn't fly the pastor. Pastor came out on his own dime. Because by this time, money's petering out. And the pastor, my family is a religious family, very religious. There's stories behind it. You get talk to me afterwards, and I'll tell you some of it. But the pastor, I remember him coming in, and he meets my mom. He meets my brother and my two sisters, three sisters at the time. And the pastor looks at them, and he talks to them for a minute, and then he looks at me, and then he looks, and he says, well, Terry, all of these people could be in the ministry. And then he looked at me, and he said, interesting. And I'm like, damn. Yes, Pastor, I know. My whole family is very religious. They have connections. I'm really jealous of some of their connections with God. my higher power I choose to call God, but I don't have that kind of connection. They were connected up. My one sister today, she knew things were going to happen before they happened. She was like in there. I don't even know. There was things like it was almost magical. It was, you know, how the hell did she do that? But anyway, there were things done, honestly, in this whole recovery process that never happened. It was never done in my lifetime for me by anybody. Because when Anel passed, we had a service in Ohio, and then the pastor took the ashes, the remains, back to California. And, of course, they're going to have a service out there where family is. And in rooms like this, in meetings like this, even though it was an outside issue, people took up a collection, and they got round-trip tickets for me and that little one to go back to California so we could be there for the service. Nobody's never done anything like that. You can't pay back stuff like that. You know what I mean? I have so much gratitude for this fellowship, especially CA. I don't knock any of the A's. Don't get that one twisted either. I love all the A's because I qualify for them all. When I was new, I wanted to see how the sex addicts slip. All right, I told you there's some wrong. I got some wires crossed. And then we never put that in action. There were so many things going on. After Anel passed, I really got back. I talked to the guys out there in California because don't forget that's where my support group is. Go back to basics, Terry. Go back to basics. So I started going to meetings. I've been meeting every night. My name was on every home group book in Akron almost. I'm talking about on Monday night, Lean on Me on Tuesday night, Stairway to Serenity on Wednesday. You see what I'm saying? It was just there because I showed up every day. I'm not working yet, and I'm showing up every day because I'm trying to get through what I'm going through. This is at 4 years of sobriety. And we're making it through. I was traumatized to the point that I remember I didn't laugh. It had to be 3 or 4 weeks, and my first real laugh came at a meeting. You guys propped me up, loved me till I could love myself again. I remember that first laugh. And I just kept trudging. But this particular part of my sobriety was a trudge. I'm trudging. We learn these things in meeting these words here, and you can take them out in the real world. They don't know what the hell you're talking about. Trudging, normal person not using that word trudge. Normal person not using resentments. You're angry with somebody. You know what I mean? They don't use that. And I have to remember that when I'm talking with regular people or normal people or whatever you want to call them. The others. All right, so now I'm going back into service here in Ohio. I'm GSR for a meeting. All of a sudden, I'm a DSR, and I'm going to the area meeting. That's where I met Spencer and Patrice and all those guys. And I'm doing this stuff, man, and I'm liking it. It's keeping me busy. All of a sudden, I'm a crackhead with a schedule. No, I'm not getting high today, but I'm doing meetings. I ran up, and when I tell you this God thing, by this time, not only do I know there's a God, I see him working a lot in my life. I see him work. It's easier to see it in your lives, though, in somebody else's, you know. I'm showing up at the places, at dances. Do you remember the first dance you ever went to sober? That was amazing to me. And I was thinking about, I acted a fool when I was out there getting high. I can go out here and dance. Maybe I might have some rhythm still. And that's what happened. I started dancing. I loved dancing. My mom loved dancing. She taught me to dance when I was 9 or 10 years old. I'm showing up at these places, and, you know, after a while, especially in Akron, CA is a small community. And so you get so you see people, you know people. I'm showing up at these events, and I got the CA shirt on. I got all kinds of CA stuff, guys. I would have CA draws if they had them. And they did at the World one time, but they were like bikini type stuff, and I'm not there. I'm not there. And I'm showing up these things, these functions, and I'm working. Oh, I was going picking up guys. Remember I told you they told me to get back the basics? So I'm picking up guys at this particular recovery facility, and so much that they said, you want a job? I'm thinking, I do a lot of does. What do you do? I know what they do, but you know what? I don't qualify for nothing, but I became what they call a RCM, a residential case manager. And I'm taking people out to meetings and sometimes putting on meetings, and I'm taking them to their appointments. And I met half of Akron out of some of these recovery facilities. There were so many people in there. I'm showing up at these places, and there's a particular woman who shows up at these things. She went through the same recovery thing. And she's showing up. I wear this shirt. She wears that shirt. All right. We're showing up at the same functions. I start to say something. She finishes. She starts to say something. I finish it. Or we say the same thing like at twins. And I'm thinking, what the hell is this about? And we ended up being friends and became more than friends. We started dating, which is I've never dated anybody in my life. Remember I told you I was a musician? Musicians don't date. Excuse me. Yeah, we became friends, man. We became more than friends. And that started an 18-year journey. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Once again, God's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. That's my little angel. She points me in this direction or that direction. I learned by this time I've learned to say, yes, dear. And that yes, dear works. Yes, dear works. You know, it really does. Now we've been together for 18 years. Because she had said she would never get married again. I said we'd never get married again, and we both got married. I know, it's crazy. The insanity goes in recovery. You know? My life, don't get this twisted, my life can still get unmanageable every now and then. Now I know it, though. And when it gets too unmanageable, I've been around long enough to where this is a problem. What's the solution? And then I try to go to the solution. And what's happening is with that is that things get better. Things get better as long as I'm trying to aim towards a solution. My keyhole to this whole thing has been progress, not perfection. That gives me a little leeway. At first, it was a lot of leeway because all the stuff that I brought in with me when I first got sober. You know, you don't just all of a sudden you're honest, all of a sudden you're good, all of a sudden, that doesn't happen like that. It's a process. Do you remember the first time they passed the basket at your first meetings? I had to sit on my hands, so I don't take their money, Terry. Don't take those people's money. Don't take the money. You know, because I think I could make it out the door before you guys can get me. It's been a process, and so now I've learned some of those processes. I actually went through the steps, and my life has gotten better. At first, I thought it was just about quantity, not so much quality, but now I found out it's really about the quality of life of what's going on. My life, like I said, things are going good. I got issues. Did I tell you I was mama's boy? Yeah, see, you smile. I had to be 41 years old before I would admit that. I am a mama's boy because I am the oldest of five. I was 9 years old, and then in the next 6 years, they had four kids. I mean, I know how to change diapers. You know, before Similac, there was formula. I know how to do that stuff, you know. My mom just passed 2 weeks ago. And I do what I learned to do, what you guys taught me to do. I keep showing up, suit up, show up, no matter what your brain is thinking. And it was really okay. She was 84. She went in her sleep. Like I was just telling, who was that? I was just telling Marie, said, went in her sleep. What better way to go? You know? Knew it was coming. We felt it was coming. I was surprised she made Christmas. I told you my anniversary date is January 15th. That's the day she passed. 2 days after my one sister's birthday, 2 days before my next sister's birthday, it was like there were numbers involved, and it was like, you know, it was all good. I'm going to say good. Sooner or later, I'm going. I hope to go that well. You know what I mean? I hope to go that well. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, but you guys have taught me this. Talk about it. You have taught me this. Once again, suit up and show up, which I do on a regular basis. This time it didn't take that long to laugh. In fact, we laughed during that celebration, that homegoing celebration. She had a big send-off. She did a bunch of stuff as far as working is concerned, but one of the things she did later on in life was she was part of this grandmom thing in the public school system where they had an older person in the classrooms who would help with the kids. And they actually made a proclamation where they have, her name was Joyce Kearns, they have a Joyce Kearns Day in Akron, Ohio. I'm like, whoa! You know, you have big crocodile tears now, for real. But it was, like I said, it was all good. I've learned to stay out of the drama and the conflict because I don't like drama and conflict, and now we're dealing with my brother and my two sisters, and it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of, you know, time will tell on that one, because, you know, who gets what and where, I'm not going to worry about that stuff. I'm blessed just to be here where I'm at right now today. You guys have taught me, and I try to learn what you teach me. I try to do what you teach me. It's worked. The faces around here, guys, like I said, I know them. I've been seeing them. Once again, Mike, I really want to thank you. You called up and said, Terry, you're our spiritual speaker. And I'm like, what? I really wanted to say, what the fuck was that all about? But I didn't. Once again, suit up and show up. I just, once again, my story, yeah, it's the same, but it's different, but I got high, now I'm not. I'm all right now with not getting high. I found out that it's so much more than just not getting drunk, not getting high, because after a while, I actually had to relearn things in this process. You guys have taught me that. That's one of my prayers, to remain to be teachable. You know, and it's nothing that I come up with. I'm just passing the people that are my sponsees. I'm just passing down what's been given to me. You know, yeah, we're here and we're free, and I understood that. And you know, you pass it on down, and this is a legacy that goes all the way back to Dr. Bob and Bill, and hopefully it'll go on forever. Yeah, the meetings are light right now, but guys, I got to tell you, the disease ain't going nowhere. It's building up. It might come at us from a different direction, you know. And hopefully you guys will be some of those that stick around, keep the doors open no matter what. Keep the doors open no matter what. Because there's going to be a next generation coming in. Next generation coming in. This is not going to change. If you believe in a higher power, you better believe in a lower power. His job is to throw stuff in the deal. See, I said stuff instead of shit, right? Once again, I want to thank the Wisconsin area. You guys are some of my favorite people. And you know that. If I don't say it enough, you should know that. You guys are, you know, where else would I go for five? Who else would ask me to speak on a snowy day, you know, on a Sunday? You know, and this is a total opposite of what it was. I told you, man, I got high. I had in that motel I told you about earlier, there was a closet. In this closet, it was a walk-in closet. I actually put two chairs in there like I was going to invite somebody in. That was crazy, by itself. I had two chairs, the little sand chairs that you take out there, the Malowans, and I had an ice chest in between there. On the ice chest, I put a bowl of water and a candle. I would get stuck in there for hours. Hours. And instead, what's happening? I'm in Wisconsin speaking at a CA meeting. I'm not stuck anymore. You know, it's all good. I don't see no bad side to none of this stuff that we do, guys. None of it. None of it. You know. Anyhow, I'm rambling, and I just want to say I love all you guys. I even like most of you. oh, yeah, no, I found out there's a difference. And I just want to say that without you, there would be no me. And just thank you.